From GEICO Subconscious News, I'm Tammy Racing Thoughts, broadcasting from your brain. You think you live in a pretty safe place, but you just heard about a break-in 4 miles away, which isn't close, but it isn't far either, you know? Art Palpitations is on the scene.
I sure am, Tammy, and I don't even know why I drove out here, because as you know, you got customized renter's insurance through GEICO, so your stuff is covered.
Oh, well, that's great. Any sign of crime there, Art?
Just some light littering, Tammy, but like they say, a little litter can lead to a lot.
Wise words. It feels good to worry less. It feels good to GEICO.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
A lot of the time we think that generosity and our willingness to be good is like something that is fixed, that we're either a generous person or not, a charitable person or not, a kind person or not. But actually your environment has a lot to do with how you behave in the exact moment. And new research from the University of Birmingham is delving into this. Research fellow Dr. Todd Vogel joins me now to discuss. Welcome to the program, Todd. I have to say, I find it fascinating how often people, I think, imagine themselves as being a particular way all the time. And our personalities just, it seems to me, our personalities are very much dependent on lots of environmental factors that aren't really given enough credit day to day.
Absolutely. And I think you hit the nail on the head where we might have these beliefs and desires about how we would like to help other people, but there's other things influencing us, like our environment. And so we were actually interested in looking at that because a lot of studies have been done on pro-social behaviors. So these are behaviors that behaviors or decisions that help other people, but they often ignore or don't take into account environmental variables. A lot of it's treated in isolation or hypothetical. How much would you donate to a charity? Or if I gave you 10 euros, how much would you split with another person? But we, as you said, we're more interested in how do these environmental factors actually play a role?
There's a study, I don't know if you know of it, Jonathan Lavav, University of Columbia, looked at parole in prisons in Israel. This is before the conflict. And what he did is he looked at he looked at the data and saw whether or not people were going to get parole or they didn't, right? And then he looked at the time of day. And what he figured out is that if you are going for parole just after the judges had breakfast or lunch, you are up to three times more likely to get off in your parole hearing. When you think about the influence, the actual impact of staying in jail for possibly a number of years just because the judge hadn't eaten in a while, it really makes you think. So talk to us about your research and what sort of environmental factors affect whether or not we are kind or generous to people.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. So the factors, when we talk about environmental factors, obviously, things like your mood can have a role, but we were much more interested in the broader environment in terms of the what we call opportunities available to you. So, an example I like to use is if you're sitting at home watching TV, you can do that. Or let's say your child asks you for help with their homework, or your spouse asks you to help with dinner, or you scroll through your phone on social media, or you do some house chores. Or help your neighbor. There's a multitude of options that you can do. And we were much more interested in how does the, what we call like the quality of those options overall, in your overall environment, influence the decision you're making right now, rather than how does somebody's mood or how close you are to them make a difference, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And this is something that you've looked at, or at least we know about, certain animals that if there's an abundance of food, they behave differently. For example, can you talk to us about the research looking into birds?
Yeah, absolutely. So I like to say that we're all just birds looking for worms. So there's been a lot of work done in animals, as you said, finding that not just birds, but monkeys and worms and rats and all sorts of animals will act differently based on the abundance and the availability of food in their environment. So imagine you're a bird and you're flying through the forest and you're searching for worms. If you see a lot of big, juicy, nutritious worms, you only have limited time and limited limited energy. So you're going to be choosy. You're going to be picky as to which worms you actually go after and try to eat. But if you're in a different forest that's more poor, let's say, then the worms might be small, might not as be nutritious. There's as many worms, but they're just not as good. If you're too picky, you're not going to eat anything. So you'll just kind of eat whatever. You're more likely to just pick up a worm compared to the other way. And so this has been shown in animals, it's been shown in humans, but what we were interested in is, instead of finding a worm for yourself, what if it's a worm for a different bird or another person? Does that make a difference? And we find, yes, it does, but even more so than for yourself.
So what do we see?
So we find that in our study, we find that people are more pro-social, so they're more willing to help other people when their environmental context is poor. So this is when the opportunities to help are generally not as good. So if I can use a silly example to tie it more to humans, I guess. Imagine you're looking for a pizza for your friend and you're walking down the street and you're just trying to find a place. If you're in Italy, the average pizza there is probably a lot higher quality than the average pizza you might find in the UK. No offense to the UK. I mean, you can find great pizza, but on average, it might not be as good. So the average pizza in Italy will look a lot different or a lot better outside of Italy. And that context, even though it's the same pizza, can shift things. So what we found was that shift from this rich pizza environment, so to speak, to a poor one, has a stronger effect when that decision is for someone else compared to just for yourself.
Walk me through that in an experiment. What did you do in the experiment, just to make it clear for people?
Yeah, so kind of following the example I gave before of you're at home watching TV, what we had was participants come in, and this was across three different studies. We showed them a nature documentary, an episode of it, like a David Attenborough documentary. And while they were watching this, we just asked them, do you want to stop watching this video and help another person? And if they said yes to that, we paused the video for them, and they had to do a separate effortful task. And they could potentially get a reward for that.
Okay.
They could do that, or they could just ignore it. They could say, it's not worth it. That worm is too small, or that pizza is not good enough. I'm just going to keep watching the video. So we had two different manipulations that we focused on. The first was that we had, in half of the experiment, people made these decisions for themselves. And then the other half, they did it for an anonymous other person. And it was important that this person was anonymous, because we didn't want it to be, you know, you're more likely to help your friends or someone that you like. We didn't want that reciprocity. So there was that aspect. But then we also varied the environments, as I've been saying, to be poor or rich. And we just did that by changing the types of, we called them opportunities, the types of rewards that they could see. In the rich environment, they saw a lot of good, high valuable, rewarding options. And in the poor environment, they saw an equal number, but on average...
I'm trying to visualize this. Just walk me through it, Todd. When you say they saw a lot of rich options, what do you mean?
So it's in the example, they're watching the video, and then we show a colored circle on the screen, and this circle has little dots in it. So the color would represent what we call the magnitude of the reward, so how much money you could get. It could be a small amount of money or a large amount. And then it had dots inside of it that represented the probability of that reward. So you could have rewards that were worth a lot of money, and the chance that you actually get it is high, and you would see more of those in a rich environment. Whereas in the poor environment, you would see a colored circle that said, oh, it's not that much money, and your chance isn't that high of actually getting anything. So in that case, of course.
Why on earth was the experiment designed this way? It seems to me that if you were trying to do something like that, like having a spin the wheel where you have lots of chocolate cake segments versus a single chocolate cake segment, would be a much easier way to... I mean, why use this mechanic of circles and dots?
Yeah, well, I would say that part of the reason we used this experiment is because a lot of the work that's been done before, looking at these type of behaviors, uses what's called a forced choice task. So it's like, do you want option A or option B? Which one is better to you? But that's not really how we make choices in our daily lives. It's very much more of a yes or no. I want to do that or I don't want to do that. Much more in sequence.
Okay.
And so we wanted to capture that more realistic behavior by doing it this way. And in terms of the colors and circles, it just makes it... I guess, are you asking why not show a picture of a chocolate slice
like
of cake?
It just seems like I have to figure this out to figure out if it's a rich environment or not, when it could be just so much easier for that person to think, oh, you know what? I could help this person out because the chances of them getting something out of it is pretty high because there seems to be lots of opportunities to do so. Or am I reading that wrong?
No. So we could have used chocolate slices of cake as images. I think that matters a bit less. But we do, at the start of the experiment, actually tell them what environment they're in. So they don't have to learn anything.
Okay.
I
love methodology. I'm really, people who listen to this program, they often, I'm very, very much interested in how we go about asking certain questions. So you've created this environment where someone's watching TV, and then they're asked, do you want to stop watching TV and then help someone? And then they're presented with a series of circles with dots in it. And that helps them decide whether or not they're going to help somebody do what?
It's more, think of it more as you're watching TV and in the corner, a pop-up for an ad shows up. Do you want to click on the ad and, you know, sign up to volunteer or donate to a charity?
Right.
But you can still watch the program. You can still watch TV. And after a minute or so, the ad goes away.
Right.
It's more like that than it stops and you do something different.
I see. And so how realistic is that in terms of, you know, when someone is taking part in a scientific experiment? I mean, for me, if I was sitting down as a volunteer, I'd be like, what are they thinking about? They're not thinking about this, thinking about something else. This is this person, I don't believe this person. I would find it very difficult knowing what I know about what scientific experiments, particularly psychological ones. I would find it very difficult to act naturally in that environment. How can you extract what you've created in this, what seems quite an abstract experiment? How can you extract meaningful learnings about true human behavior from that?
I would first argue that compared to a lot of other psychology experiments, this is much more naturalistic, more realistic than other experiments that are often done. Usually you put people in an empty room, you have them stare at a computer screen, and they, you know, click buttons on a computer.
Right.
Whereas this, part of the reason that we chose to show a documentary is because this reflects the type of behaviors that people do in everyday life. They watch TV. You're right that it is still a psychology experiment. People are coming, you know, from their home to a university. There is that aspect to it. But we ask people afterwards, like, how did you feel? And a lot of people say, I enjoyed it. That was the most fun experiment I've ever done. And we really tried to make it unintrusive. So throughout the experiment, they're never forced to do anything. If they want to sit and watch the nature documentary for an hour, more power to them. They could have just done that. And it would be exactly what they might have done at home.
Okay, so let's just walk through. So once the ad or once the opportunity arises to help somebody out, what is the help that they're giving to somebody else?
So in this experiment, we used monetary rewards, so money. And when they go after this opportunity, they earn credits. So this might be 5 credits, this might be 10 or 20 credits. And at the end of the experiment, we exchange that for real money.
Okay.
And so when it was for themselves, they would actually get that money. When it was for another person, we would give that money to that other person. So there was an actual consequence as well.
Right.
To this credits and money.
And so the idea is, I'm only going to work hard if I think it's because I'm giving up my time. Mm-hmm. So I'm more likely to make an effort if I think that this effort is going to yield something. Is that right? Because it reminds me of an experiment where researchers gave kids Lego sets to make all day. And they gave one group Lego sets to make. And then once they finished that one, they would make the same set again over and over. And the kids loved that experiment. But when the other group did almost exactly the same thing, they got bored and very annoyed very quickly. They were asked to make the Lego set and then to break this that Lego set that they made down and then make it again. And so essentially they were doing the same thing, but they realized there was no point or utility in this Sisyphean task. And it kind of made sense to me that they wanted to feel like what they're doing, if they're going to expend energy, they want to know that it's worthwhile. And that seems like what your experiment seems to tell us, that if someone's going to go out of their effort to do something for someone, they want to know that it works, which is why I suppose when it comes to giving money in charity, transparency as to what, you know, we really want to know that money's going somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's interesting to me because in this experiment and in others, there is no direct benefit to the participant in terms when they're helping the other person. That person's anonymous and the participant themselves doesn't receive anything for it. So it's sort of this Sisyphean task, as you said. But we still see that people will go out of their way and put in this time and this effort to help other people. There are other studies that show that. But what I found interesting with our findings was that people were not aware of this environmental bias that we found. So we had this poor and this rich, different situations, different context. And people thought, oh, in this rich environment, there's a lot of good options around me. I'm being nicer. I'm actually helping more. And they report that afterwards. They're like, I was being more helpful in the rich environment. But we found the opposite, actually. Their actual behavior was that they were more likely to help to act on these opportunities when the environment was poor. So there's this difference between what people think they're doing and what they're actually doing.
So when you say they're more likely to act in these opportunities, they think they're being really helpful in an environment that's really rich, but actually they're more likely to help people out when the chances of success are lower?
Yeah, basically.
I totally misread that. That is totally counterintuitive.
It's very counterintuitive. So we find that people are more likely to act in the poor environment, meaning that they're more likely to stop watching the video and try to earn this reward for another person.
I'm post-rationalizing here, which is always a problem in psychology. But I guess what that environment might say to someone is, if there isn't many slices of chocolate cake, is that, oh, I'm going to try and help someone out because there isn't a lot of chocolate cake around and I might be able to get this person a little bit of chocolate cake. So what can we actually get from this? I mean, obviously, psychological research, you know, it's involving humans. I guess the idea is to understand the human condition. Is there anything that we can take from this? Say, for example, if we work in a charity or we're trying to get people to help a good cause?
Yes. I've been thinking about this, and I want to stress that I am not suggesting that we make everyone's lives worse. we don't make people's environments poorer on purpose. Rather that we find this interesting effect that seems to have this evolutionary basis, because we see it in birds and monkeys and other animals, where we are more likely to help when the opportunities, the chances to do so are a bit poorer. You may be more likely to help if the chances to do so are generally poorer, but when those chances are better, the overall outcome is still better. So it really, to answer your question, it kind of depends on your goal. Is your goal to get people to donate more often or to donate more?
Yeah. Okay. Well, really interesting speaking with you. That's Dr. Todd Vogel at the University of Birmingham. Thanks, Todd.
Thank you very much.
Future Proof with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland.
Sundays from midday on News Talk.